From our downtown Philadelphia studios, this is a special edition of Dave Kinchin Tonight. Well, hello everybody. I hope you are having a wonderful start to the Easter holiday weekend. It is Dave Kinchin with a special edition of the program. We are off on Sunday, of course, in observance of Easter, but wanted to do a bit of a program in recognition of the 20th anniversary of the massacre at Columbine High School. It's hard to believe it's been 20 years. It's been on my mind a little bit. Whenever these anniversaries come up, you know, you start thinking about these things. It was one of those unspeakable tragedies that happened at a time when, you know, everybody knows where they were when they got the news. You know, everybody knows where they were when they heard about it. It's just one of those things. It's one of those big, massive moments. Really the first, I've heard it said, modern mass school shooting of that scale, you know. And it's whenever we've had these mass shootings of any kind, really, not just schools, over the last 20 years, it's hard not to think back to Columbine. It's hard not to think back to that time. So it is a Saturday, and it's a holiday weekend. You know, people are out and about in the downtown Philadelphia area where our studios are. And even though people are, you know, doing what they do, part of life is you should live and you should be free to do as you please virtually, as long as it's within the confines of the law and ethics, of course. We should be living in freedom and not in fear. No matter what the case may be, you know, we hear acts of violence, whether it's terrorism or a mass shooting here in this country. And, you know, you part of it is you can't, you have to be vigilant, but you also, I think as human beings, we have to take a moment and reflect, you know. And I do a lot of that in my life. I reflect on things, not really dwelling, just reflecting, looking back on good things and not so good things, you know, not just even in my life, but, you know, news-wise. I mean, being a news person to my core, I remember that day. I was in high school. I was on the school paper. You know, I was a budding journalist. I either just finished or actually, I think I was just about to start a big journalism camp up at Michigan State. And, you know, but still, while I was in high school. And actually, I was working for a little town paper, the Northwest Gazette. I was they called me an intern, but they let me do some writing. I did a little bit of everything. And so, you know, even then I had my interest in journalism, and so I was focused on news, whatever was happening. And I was also involved in public policy and getting, you know, working on youth issues too. Youth violence was an issue I was working on as well. So when Columbine happened, it spoke to me on two levels: as a budding journalist paying attention to the news coverage, but then also as somebody who worked in youth programming, after school programs, and working on ways to curb youth violence. So I wanted to get into this show just kind of talking about my thought, you know, where we are 20 years later, more so just remembering that day. You know, I wanted to talk about it and just share my experiences of where I was that day. And nowhere near Colorado, but you didn't need to be. You know, you could have been halfway around the world. You turn the news on and you just couldn't believe what was happening. At least I couldn't. 12 students killed, one teacher killed, and about 24 others injured. A friend of mine, and I'll leave his name out of this because I don't think it's, you know, a friend of mine who's a journalist was telling me just this week, and I think hopefully he would be okay with me saying this. It was just such a fascinating conversation. And, you know, people use the word fascinating, and it doesn't always have a positive context. I mean, it was fascinating in a sad context and in a news person's context, too, a journalist context. A friend of mine was working out there that day as a journalist, and he told me basically he was on another story, and he heard on the scanner traffic shots fired at Columbine High School, Littleton, Colorado, about I think about 25, 30 minutes outside of Denver, roughly, about 25, 30 minutes outside of Denver. So we rushed over to the scene, he had said that, I'm saying this as I replay it in my mind, this the way it was originally played in my mind when he told me this. And he said people were running out of the school. And he said that somebody ran over to him saying, my best friend just got killed. And it turned out that, fortunately, that friend did not get killed, but that was what he thought at the time. I don't want to say anymore. I'm trying to be, respectful of my friend, but I think sharing something that I think is compelling and a story that I'm sure, other people have heard, but it was the first time I met anyone or had known anyone who had direct dealings with it literally as it was going on. I mean, literally as it was happening, to have the scanners go off and have every law enforcement officer in reasonable distance and beyond flooding to that scene, whenever they got there, is really something, I was in Southfield, Michigan. I was with my family. We were doing some shopping. I went to get some clothes. I started going to these conferences. I was a junior in high school. I started going to these political conferences. This is more the youth the youth after school programming and youth issues work I was doing, which included violence and teen suicide and depression and drugs and, all the things that, you work on when you're working on issues concerning young people. And around that time, it's a group called the National League of Cities, and it's a group of mayors from cities all around the country, I think including Littleton. There's 19,000 cities and villages and towns represented by this organization, NLC, which basically they help mayors be better mayors. They help council people be better council people. They educate local officials on major issues. It's a lobbying firm. They represent issues that matter to politicians, to state, to local and county leaders, which is local as well. So city leaders, county people, anything that matters to them, the NLC represents those issues. In Washington, they have their representatives, lobbyists who lobby members of the House and the Senate to deal with anything that might affect the way mayors can be mayors and the way local towns and really states too can do business. So they wanted these mayors around 98 wanted to look at how young people viewed the world and high school kids. And so they started to invite us along to their conferences. And then in 1999, they decided they wanted they were putting together this council a council on youth education and families to steer the organization's interest in these issues. And they wanted three teens to serve on this committee with mayors from around the country. So it was a unique experience, and I was fortunate enough to join it. And I only say that because, I'm kind of setting the table here, and I it's not about going off in a big tangent and talking about something else, but it all does come together from my experience of the Columbine, how Columbine impacted me as a person, as a citizen, as a consumer of news, and as somebody who had a young hand in dealing with public policy matters. So part of what I was doing, as I remember, was around that time, literally going into the store. And when I was home, it was interesting. I was home for Thanksgiving last year, and I happened to drive by the very same store or the same shopping complex, and I remembered, my gosh, that's where I was when I learned of Columbine. It was just a place that I remember. So I remember listening to the radio in the car. I was with my mom, and I remember listening, and I said, my gosh, what a horrible, we all just thought, what a, horrific situation. And then at some point, I found a TV set. I think it was either in the store or it was in another place. But I saw the kids. I seem to remember people, you know, the kids running out of the school and just the police, the traffic, and it might have been a helicopter camera shot. But I remember the kind of the early images of everything coming in nationally. When the national media was breaking into this whole story. And I was shopping to get some dress clothes to go to this conference, the first council meeting, NLC Council on Youth Education and Families. And part of it, it may have been either the first or second meeting. It was one of the early meetings anyway. But I joined it around the same time, April of 99. And what was really interesting to me was kind of just thinking, this really, you know, obviously this starts a conversation about guns, and obviously this starts a conversation about school safety, and obviously this starts a conversation about how to protect young people, you know, and this is exactly what we were doing. And I just remember being shell-shocked as I not just talked with members of my family about this, but as we talked to the local officials I worked with, you know, in 99, I was on our a local commission. So before joining the national committee, there was a local one in Farmington Hills, a city commission on these same issues. And we were talking about this. And a lot of it, I remember, was sort of venting and sharing our shock and our anger, our sadness. I want to say that our police chief, who was on the commission as well, talked to us at one point about the safety of our schools. I remember, we had teachers inspecting our bags, and we had all of that going on at the schools. We had great police liaison officers at our, Officer Pat Sidge. I still remember his name. He's actually, I think, a Facebook friend of mine, which is kind of funny. you know, just all these years later, you know. But he was a great guy, and he was the liaison to the Philadelphia. Hello, not the Philadelphia Police Department, the Farmington Hills Police Department. And our school district had such a great relationship with our police department. That was the one thing I was really blessed, one of the many things that I was blessed to have as a student in the Farmington Public Schools, a great relationship with the police department. And me, you know, me being on this committee with our chief, you know, we all had, I mean, there were citywide conversations, but people involved in our youth program, we were talking about this with our police officials, our school officials. I want to say even at one point there was a meeting in school. There was like I forget what we used to call those things. When, like, not a general session, but you know, when you have, everybody kind of gets together in the auditorium. It was either that we had some kind of a conversation about all this, and a series of conversations as students. For me, as kind of a, you know, student, I guess activist, or, you know, a person kind of really looking into these issues, talked about it with their mayor, talked about it with their city council. I can't remember everything that was done, you know, from the police side to better secure the schools, other than I remember we had our bags checked and things like that. I think there were times where there were more officers around patrolling everything. But this was that part, I have to believe, was just as regular as at our school as any other school at the time. It must have been, you know, because it was just that massive. You know, and really in our lifetime, we really hadn't seen anything quite like that. I mean, a tragic shooting at a school, yes, but something like that, I, you know, was really a whole, a game changer, and obviously not in any good way, other than sparking these conversations about school security and that sort of thing. So, at the NLC, one of the things we were trying to do is figure out, you know, how exactly to steer issues of youth, education, families for a massive organization. So one of the plans that came about, actually we laid out just before I even joined it, was to create an institute for youth family issues. And we would have recommendations for cities and towns to deal with various issues. Early childhood education would be one, after school programming, all of these. But dealing with youth violence was a very serious thing, where we, one of the things we started doing was looking at other communities and seeing how their police departments worked with their school districts and gathering ideas, you know. Now, this is all at a time when I'm, you know, there's the emotional side of how this impacts people, you know. There's the emotional side of trying to process this. And, you know, again, there's a lot that I remember. There's things I, you know, there's things that are a little foggy. But I do remember the council's efforts nationally being stronger over time as we really try to tackle these issues and give city, the whole idea was to give city leaders a toolkit, you know, to give them a way to, you know, to say, you know, to say, here's how we can recognize threats. Here's how we can work with law enforcement. You know, here's how, you know, here are things that are happening that seem to work in other places. And then there was something else that happened before another council meeting. There was another tragic shooting. I can't remember which one, but there was another one, and we went into that meeting, you know, in shock, and you know, of course, that dominating the conversation. So I say all this to say that I saw it on many different levels as a student. I saw the increased security in our school, you know, as someone who would have chats with local policymakers, and you know, I saw how we were looking at it from the local side of things. I saw how we were looking at this from the national side of it, in terms of not so much Washington, although we were certainly watching Washington very closely, obviously, but we were looking at it from the standpoint of what cities around the country were doing. And it's not easy. You know, another thing that happened in April, a big April event, was Waco in 93. And as fate would have it, the mayor of Waco was on this council with me, this National League of Cities Council. He was not mayor when the Branch Davidian situation happened, but he was involved in the community. And he had talked about, it was really kind of sobering to listen to how he talked about how Waco, a town of about 100,000 people or so, I think, how they pulled together, how they, I think Baylor's down there, Baylor University, right? How they, yeah, how this impacted the community there. And it was eye-opening to see, you know, his account of that. So, you know, over time, I've kind of met people who have dealt with these horrible tragedies, you know, and I always wonder how you deal with it as a public official. I mean, I kind of got a sense of that doing the work I was doing at the time. But certainly as, you know, as a journalist, a friend of mine I mentioned who was there in the early response of it. But I think just as human beings, how we think about these things and how it was reported that there's a mass shooting almost every day. I don't think it's every day, but there's some sort of mass shooting every day. Now, the definition of mass shooting is kind of, seems like it's changed a little bit over time. But, you know, we had Parkland, we had the last few years, Parkland, Pulse Nightclub, I'm going out of order. You know, we had the Country Bar in California, right? where some teenagers or college students were out, you know, doing some country two-step, I think is that what they call it, you know. I always loved that kind of stuff. I just could never do it. And somebody, you know, started opening fire there. We talked on this program about, you know, we interviewed a survivor of the Pulse nightclub shooting. I found myself in Las Vegas talking to doctors who were, you know, wading through blood all over the floor as they were trying to triage hundreds of people injured. And of course, the 50 or so killed in the Las Vegas shooting, that being, you know, the worst mass shooting in American history. You know, at one point it was Columbine. And so I was thinking about that. I mean, being in Vegas and covering that and seeing the emotion and the fear that people had, worried about their loved ones, you know, I thought back to Columbine then, you know, and even though I never covered Columbine. So these things are, I don't know, the mass shooting at the Capital Gazette in Annapolis, five people killed there, covering that, it was, you know, you go into a weird headspace as a journalist. I mean, you focus on the facts, you focus on what's happening, but there is an emotional toll, and I felt all of that. I mean, I was, you know, my head was pretty full when I came back from Vegas, you know, covering that, the Mandalay Bay country concert shooting. And some ways I still don't know how I processed it, you know. In other ways, you part of it is you're reminded of something else when something else happens. I mean, Aurora, Illinois had a deadly office shooting. There was a mass shooting at the Navy Yard in D.C. That some colleagues of mine covered. So, you know, you just, these things, so seeing it from so many perspectives, you know, the first major mass shooting, like I said, being Columbine, and seeing the aftermath of how it impacted high schools and how it impacted people my age, it really shook us up, I think. And then seeing, you know, later as a journalist, these kinds of things, seeing how almost, well, it's become the norm. I mean, this, you know, when Paducah, Kentucky happened, when Jonesboro, Arkansas happened, those mass shootings or those school shootings, even then it was starting to become normalized. And I worry that we, especially with our, you know, our heads and our phones and looking down all the time, I worry that we just get too distracted. You know, try to put this into words. I'm not here to tell anybody how to react to any of these mass shootings, how to deal with any of this stuff. I'm not here for that. But I do think that we have to find ways to reach out to people, who are going through something. I mean, this 20-year-old woman who apparently was obsessed with Klebold and Harris, the shooters at Columbine, and was likely planning, I mean, flew out to Denver and was likely planning some kind of attack. It was reported that she was pretty much planning, so that something was being planned, that she was sold a gun. She, of course, ended up killing herself, shooting herself. She was found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound, but who knows what could have happened. I mean, there were threats that shut down schools all across Denver, including Littleton. And then there was, another threat at Littleton before. At Columbine less than a year ago. So this is the same school living in a constant state of, you know, fear. And I'm sure they have much better coordination and whatnot since that all happened. And modern technology helps to deal with these things, to monitor threats and whatever. But again, we can't live in fear, but we have to live in vigilance. And my biggest fear is that, number one, I think one big fear has already come true, and that's the fact that these things are already, you know, we're desensitized in a sense, you know. But then the second part of it is that lack of vigilance. You know, It's the one thing we can do. You know, if you see something that just doesn't look right, you have to make that call. Check something out, you know. We also need more resources so that folks in law enforcement can better connect the dots. I mean, the Pulse nightclub shooter, there were warnings there. You know, there's other cases where there were warnings. I think the Sandy Hook shooter, Lanza, there were warnings there. So there's a lot of things that still have to happen. And I remember even, again, going back to the policy side of it, trying to figure out how we better connect resources, law enforcement, schools. But that was, you know, 20 years ago. I mean, here we are. I left that council in 2001 when I started college. I mean, we've made progress, but there's still a long way to go for school districts and security, for schools, for law enforcement, the mental health community now, getting them on board and trying to figure out how we work all this, how we work all this out. In any event, I know I'm jumping around a little bit. Sometimes I just, you know, a little bit of it is, you know, you have some notes and a little bit of it is stream of consciousness. But I just wanted to share my perspective, you know, again, from a student, high school student at that time, and what I saw at our school, looking at it sort of from the policy side of it, you know, and then looking at it kind of from the journalistic side of things too. You know, struggling to find answers when you don't always have it. But I want to, you know, for I want all of us, especially on this Easter weekend, you know, for those who are, you know, religious, or even if you're not, say a prayer for the families. You know, say a prayer for the 13 lives lost that day. Say a prayer for, you know, the 24 others or so who were injured and still live with this, and the countless others who live with these emotional scars. I think that's a good thing that we can do. Whatever higher power you believe in, I think, you know, maybe we can all just say a prayer for them. And I also think it's appropriate, of course, you know, being in a downtown area, I can't really control we only have so much insulation in the studio. But I, you know, so I can't, there's outside elements I can't control, but I think it might be appropriate to just have a moment of silence, for the victims. And thank you so much. It's always tough talking about these things, but hopefully you found some comfort in how you were dealing with it. If you were thinking about it, if it's been on your mind, hopefully it's more than just a headline in the news, the 20th anniversary of Columbine. You know, there's lessons to learn from it. And, you know, I think in many ways we're still learning those lessons. In many ways we still have, obviously, major lessons to learn with the constant mass shootings that continue to happen, tragically, or all too often, it certainly seems like. Anyway, I want to thank you for listening on this show. I hope you have a wonderful Easter with your family and friends, and enjoy the good times. You know, certainly enjoy what this holiday is all about for Christians all around the world, for our Jewish friends, wishing you a wonderful Passover as well. Just take care of each other. You know, that's all you can really say. Have fun, make great memories, have great times, but look out for one another, especially in these often haunting days that we live in, I think, just based on the headlines and things that are happening in our world. It is Dave Kinchin tonight. Thanks so much for joining us, and all the best to you and yours.